You behave with a mama, with a mama.
Yo, this is G-Love on WBAI, New York.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is 7 o'clock. Time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined this evening by Mike.
Hi.
Dot Red.
Hello.
Red Hacked.
Hello.
Voltaire.
Yo, dog.
And Kyle.
Howdy.
Jim over in the corner there.
Hello.
And Bernie S. down in Philadelphia.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
Well, we are back after 1 week off and after 3 weeks of fundraising. I want to thank everybody for calling in and for pledging for the amazing things we were offering, and just to keep this place going, it was a lot of fun for everybody. And I think we did well. I think judging from the number I see on the screen there, I think the station did well overall.
Make sure you pay your pledge.
Yes, please pay the pledge, and of course we will do everything in our power to make sure the premiums get to you. I know there are some people that are still waiting for premiums from previous drives, and we are working on those. Please email us if you've been waiting longer than 6 months. How about that? Because otherwise, it's just too many people. It just doesn't move that quickly when you have a whole lot of volunteers and so many programs to deal with. This is a lot more complicated than any NPR station, let me tell you, because we have over 100 radio programs, and everybody's got their own premiums. But we do try and get everything out there. But write to us, oth@2600.com, if you've been waiting for a long time. One update, though, that I do have to remind people about or tell people about. We've had significant problems with the Tesla coil premiums we offered back in October. We just haven't gotten the material from Architech, the organization that we were working with. So we're probably going to have to offer some kind of a substitute for that. There's really no way around that, unfortunately. We just haven't gotten the t-shirts and the video material, I believe, that we were offering. So that's something. If you are waiting for that, write to us, oth@2600.com. We'll work something out where we can get you something else. Everything else, though, you should be getting exactly what it was you pledged for, including what we were offering last couple of weeks, which was the special WikiLeaks package. And boy, that's caused a fair stir around here. We're still compiling it. We're still putting it together. And if you pay your pledge, then you will be getting that in the mail, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. Yeah. Okay, we have some late-breaking news. This actually is unfolding right now, late developments with Bradley Manning. I believe, Mike, you know the latest on this.
Well, Bradley Manning, who's the soldier who was charged with leaking classified material to WikiLeaks that we've now allegedly, the material that we've now all seen, and he was charged just a couple hours ago with 22 new charges, the most serious of which is called aiding the enemy. And that is a potential death penalty charge, although the prosecution has said they are not currently interested in the death penalty, but it's
well,
really
not
unclear.
Interested in it, but the judge might be interested.
The judge might be.
Yeah.
And so it's really unclear who this enemy is that he's allegedly aiding.
Well,
I guess it's us, right?
Our country has a lot of enemies, so it could be us, too. I've been called enemy of the state many times.
He could be aiding people that are mean to cats.
I don't know what that means, but yeah.
It's some petty allegation to Julian Assange.
Do you want to explain it?
Yeah, and Daniel Schmitz, or I'm not sure his official last name.
Daniel Berg.
Excuse me, Daniel Berg.
Dom Scheitberg.
Daniel Dom Scheitberg.
Yeah.
In his new book, which is...
Inside WikiLeaks,
yes,
which sounds like this when you drop it on the table, because we have a copy.
It's not that... You're making it sound heavier than it is.
Well,
it's a couple hundred pages.
It's a weighty book here, but yeah, it's not... You don't want to get hit with this. But yeah, there's mention of Julian's cat in here or something.
Yeah,
this is what you latched onto? This is the important part of the book?
No, that's not what I latched onto. That's what he latched onto to denounce Julian Assange, which I think is rather petty.
Uh-huh.
All right. Mr. Schmidt's cat notwithstanding.
Yeah, let's get back to something that's important here, namely the charges against Bradley Manning.
And it's taken them, you know, all these 7 months to figure out that he's allegedly aiding the enemy. And at least some more time to explain who the enemy is.
I'm seeing 5 counts of theft of public property or records, 2 counts of computer fraud, 8 counts of transmitting defense information in violation of the Espionage Act, count of wrongfully causing intelligence to be published on the internet, knowing it would be accessible to the enemy. And that's the one that apparently carries the death penalty. 5 additional charges are for violating Army computer security regulations. What do you think, Bernie?
Well, I think that the enemy is us. When the U.S. is speaking of the enemy and in releasing information to us. So that's a scary thought.
I suppose so. Any other words on this, Mike, from the stories?
I mean, I'm just sort of amazed that this is in addition to the charges he was already charged with.
And how many charges were those?
I don't have a number, but there were some pretty serious charges in there of improper handling of classified material and all this stuff. So, Adrian Lamo at our conference, who turned Manning in, said that he believed that Manning would get no more than 6 months in prison, and that was clearly wrong because he's been there for more than 6 months already and hasn't even been charged yet.
Well, they say the new charges more accurately reflect the broad scope of the crimes that Private First Class Manning is accused of committing. That's according to Captain John Haberland explaining these new charges. Now, if convicted, he could face a life sentence in prison. That's assuming the death penalty is off the table. Before these charges were brought down, the maximum jail time was 52 years. Now we're looking at life, so things have gotten significantly worse in the last...
52 years is pretty bad as well.
52 years is bad too, but he's a young guy, you know, so this is life. This is probably more than life he's facing. It's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out.
And again, for what? There's no evidence that I've seen anyway that any enemy, whoever that is, has... benefited in any way from any of this. The only thing that's happened is the government looks bad.
I think something that you need to look at too is what's happening in various parts of the world. Things that that have been tied, however indirectly, to the leaks. If you look at certain cables, you see that governments, including Gaddafi's government, including the government in Tunisia, including the government in Egypt, have all been implicated in these cables as being corrupt, as robbing the people. Things that kind of get people in a bad mood against governments. And I see Hillary Clinton out there saying how great it is that people are rising up against tyranny. Well, you know, maybe revelation of the truth helped to create that environment. It can be a good thing. It doesn't have to be a bad thing. And we seem to only be looking at it as a bad thing when related to WikiLeaks or to Bradley Manning or to any of that. Voltaire.
If anything, this actually helped national security because before this, this stuff was marked as not very secret. There's like the lowest two levels of classification. Mm-hmm. And before these were released, it had the amount of people that had access to it was, I think, over 2 million.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of people had access
and
to this information.
You can be like 99% sure that somebody, one of those 2 million people, was selling it to like foreign governments and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That if you have
to real enemies, yes.
Yeah. And now there's a more equitable distribution of the information.
They're not likely to tell other people that they're doing that.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. I think this is very interesting. These charges, these new charges, I haven't heard anything about it, but it sounds a lot like they've been adapted for this, but there's still punishments and consequences for a very old form of espionage. And this is much different. This is a leak of information to a stateless entity, which is like the world.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to charge somebody with espionage, usually the way you would go about it, you'd catch them selling state secrets to a foreign government, to an enemy of some sort.
Right.
This is a situation where someone is being accused of leaking something to everybody so that the whole world can see just what's going on. Very, very different. It's very hard to equate it with something that we might be used to as far as what spies might be charged with.
Emmanuel?
Yes.
I just want to say the charge of espionage, I think, requires that it be defense-related information. And I think, I'm not sure who it is, but one U.S. senator has recently proposed new legislation, sponsored it, that would change the definition of espionage to not require defense-related information to be leaked, but it could be just any kind of classified information, which is a scary thought. It's really lowering the bar on...
Are you talking about the Senate bill that was introduced by Senator Benjamin Cardin, Democrat of Maryland?
I think that's the one, yes.
Well, that's legislation that was introduced about 2 weeks ago into the Senate. It would broadly criminalize leaks of classified information. It's called Senate Bill 355. Would make it a felony for a government employee or contractor who has authorized access to classified information to disclose such information to an unauthorized person in violation of his or her non-disclosure agreement. Under existing law, criminal penalties apply only to the unauthorized disclosure of a handful of specified categories of classified information. That's in non-espionage cases. Those categories include codes, cryptography, communications intelligence, identities of covert agents, nuclear weapons design information. But the new bill would amend the espionage statutes to extend these penalties to the unauthorized disclosure of any classified information. And undoubtedly, this is a direct result of what happened last year with WikiLeaks.
Sure, and one thing that's also disturbing about this is it doesn't matter if this bill goes through and it's voted into law. It won't even matter if the classified information that someone is alleged for releasing was even properly classified in the first place. There's all kinds of information that our government classifies and makes secret for no good reason at all. So if someone just releases some classified information that should have been classified in the first place but they think everybody should know about, they could literally get the death penalty if this bill goes through. So it's scary what's going on, and it's really a war. It's a war about secrecy between the United States and really its own citizens, as I see it.
Now, also just going back to Manning and what he's actually facing, as far as him, you know, being charged with espionage, I would think if they try to argue that secret operations or people taking part in those were revealed in this leak, then it would count as, you know, espionage under their current definition, I think. And
okay. Meanwhile, we have this this other news story that came out at the end of last month. President George W. Bush canceled a speaking engagement because the group that invited him, the Young Presidents Organization, had also asked Julian Assange to take the conference stage. Which is interesting because it took place in Denver, and of course, there's no way that Julian Assange could be in Denver to be a part of that.
Well, I think it was going to appear by video link.
Yeah, I figured there was some kind of wizardry involved in that, but not taking the stage. You know, he wouldn't be on the same stage as Bush. That's the way it's being portrayed here. The former president, according to Bush's spokesman, has no desire to share a forum with a man who has willfully and repeatedly done great harm to the interest of the United States. Bush accepted an invitation to speak at the Global Leadership Summit in Denver, which included discussions on topics ranging from education reform to the latest unrest in the Middle East. The former president only learned he would share billing with Assange a couple of days before the actual event took place. We regret that our members will not be able to hear from President Bush, the statement from the Young Presidents Organization said. President Bush has spoken to our members several times in the past, and we hope to have him participate in another event in the future. Our only mission is to enable members to become better leaders through education and idea exchange. And I think that says a lot about the value of idea exchange in someone like George W. Bush's mind, that it's better not to talk to people you disagree with. And in fact, that's how foreign policy was led for the period he was in power. Julian Assange had a tweet about this, and one of the famous Julian Assange tweets, thin skin. George W. Bush cancels talk at YPO.org after organizers courageously refused to remove Assange as speaker. Very interesting. And of course, we also have Julian Assange, who has lost his appeal. Actually, it wasn't the appeal. It was the actual hearing. I believe he's appealing, and I'm not sure if he actually is.
Yeah.
But he is due to be extradited to Sweden, and that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And also with relation to the new charges against Bradley Manning, whether or not Julian Assange has something to worry about as far as being brought back to the United States.
Well, it's interesting that the U.S. government has yet to find anything to charge Assange with.
They're working on it.
Yeah, they're working. They're working. They've been working for almost a year at this point, and they've yet to find anything. It's kind of heartening in a way. It's terrible for Manning, but
it's also interesting that that President Bush can't share his stage with Julian Assange. He also can't go overseas to speak because he's afraid of being arrested for war crimes.
I really doubt he's afraid of being arrested.
That's
for
why
war
he
crimes.
Cancels.
I would love to see.
That's why he cancels in Switzerland.
Yeah, I don't think that's why. I think
no. And that director, what's his name?
I think that's Pollack fantasy to believe that anybody in this government thinks that anyone's going to be arrested anywhere for any war crimes.
Really,
I mean, I would love to see it, but I just don't think they really think that's realistic. We want to tell ourselves that that's great, but I don't think they really
Henry
believe
Kissinger
it.
Doesn't one fly to Spain because he's afraid of being arrested for war crimes.
He said that. Henry Kissinger said he's afraid of being arrested if he goes to a certain
because
country.
There are good judges in Spain that are willing to try people for war crimes.
I know, but I don't think he's afraid of that. I don't think he believes that he's privy to the same laws. Love to be proven wrong on this. Go ahead, Bernie.
I think it's really great news, actually, that former President George W. Bush refuses to take a stage with anyone who has done anything against the interests of the United States, because he clearly harmed the United States' interests himself a great deal. And so if he's not going to take the stage with himself, then we'd never have to hear from him again. So I think that's great news.
Yeah, well, let's see if we can keep it that way.
We do now know how to make George W. Bush, you know, shut up.
Just invite Julian Assange to the same thing?
I think this is very valuable information.
Yeah, well, you got to get the people that invite him to these things to actually agree to invite somebody that he would object
to. We could just
start
a rumor.
yeah, we're good at that. We really are. There's all kinds of things we could possibly do. All right, well, we have other stories to cover as well, and this is only one of many. Of course, we'll be taking phone calls, 212-209-2900, a little bit later on. Here's a story. This bugged me. This might be kind of controversial, I suppose. It involves South Park. That's why I say that. A 21-year-old man who admitted posting online threats against the creators of the animated TV series South Park was sentenced Thursday to 25 years in prison. Zachary Adam Chesser encouraged violent jihadists to attack South Park writers for an episode that depicted the Prophet Muhammad in a bear suit. He posted online messages that included the writers' home addresses and urged online readers to pay them a visit. His actions caused people throughout the country to fear speaking out, even in jest, to avoid being labeled as enemies who deserve to be killed, said U.S. Attorney Neil McBride. The fact that a young man from Northern Virginia could support such violence and terror is a sobering reminder of the serious threat that homegrown jihadists posed to this country. He pleaded guilty in October to providing material support to terrorists, communicating threats, and soliciting others to threaten violence. The three charges carried a maximum sentence of 30 years in prison. I accept full responsibility for all my actions. I would like to take the opportunity to express remorse. He is also accused of trying to go to Somalia to join Al-Shabaab, which is an Islamic militant group the United States considers a terrorist organization. I've looked at this story. I've read it. I've tried to find out more about it. All I can find is that this guy posted the addresses of the two South Park writers and encourage people to visit them, to pay them a visit, and imply violence, but not actually say anything specific, not actually carry out violence himself. 25 years in prison for that? I mean, I've seen people do worse on IRC as far as posting people's home addresses and threatening them with violence directly. Is it just because this guy is Muslim? What's the actual reason here?
It was Santa Claus.
Santa Claus? What?
It wasn't even Muhammad in the South Park episode. It wasn't even Muhammad who was in the bear suit. It was, we finally took off the mask. It was Santa Claus. Yeah,
but see, I don't study. I don't study this enough. I don't know my South Park. Mike?
I think it's pretty clear that this guy's religion had a lot to do with the seriousness of the charges brought against him. I think, you know, calling for people to be injured for what they are on television is obviously wrong and possibly even criminal, depending on exactly what he said. But 25 years?
I've heard senators call for people to be hurt. I've heard people threaten Julian Assange with death, who are elected officials.
And I say every time that I think it's wrong.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I don't think they should be thrown in jail for 25 years.
The only thing
that's unclear is if he has actual affiliation rather than this vague allegations of the group in Somalia that may actually turn into something actually criminal. But it's sort of buried.
But again, we've seen how happy the United States is to classify anybody as a terrorist group that they don't like, including the satellite network that some guy was put in jail for providing to customers. Red Eye.
Wait, did it say in the article that he provided material support to that group, or it was?
That was
because I mean that sounds like either maybe he was sending them funds or something.
Well,
like
that.
I mean,
there
is another level.
Providing
to this.
Material support to terrorists,
which he pled guilty to.
Ah.
Yeah, but what does that mean? What does that actually mean? It could be very, very vague.
We talked about this earlier, Emmanuel, a few months ago.
About providing material support to terrorists. When did we have that conversation?
You know, we talked. It was a news story because the.
About a story. Okay, I thought
about
right.
the story about. The U.S.'s definition of material support, a federal court ruled, it might have been Supreme Court, I'm not sure, maybe Mike recalls, it was such a vague definition of what material support meant. It could simply be something like making a public statement saying, don't do this because this would be not in your best interest. That alone could be considered material support of a terrorist organization. So it doesn't take much. You don't have to give them money. You don't have to give them goods, weapons, drugs, anything like that. Material support can really be just speech.
Yeah, and it could also be trying to convince them to support nonviolence, which is why a lot of NGOs were against that ruling.
Mm-hmm.
There's another case, too. A student was jailed for 5 years in England on Friday after being found guilty of posting extremist Islamic material, including footage of attacks on coalition troops in Afghanistan, posting that on the Internet. According to the Metropolitan Police Service's Counterterrorism Command, Mohammed Gul, 23 years old, from East London, posted movies he had created as well as existing extremist videos on video sharing website YouTube over a period stretching from March 2008 to February 2009. User accounts named Marine Target Corp, Marine Target Inc., 35 Marines, things like that. He uploaded video that included attacks on coalition forces in Afghanistan and Iraq, the making of and detonation of improvised explosive devices, terrorist training camps, footage of the 9/11 attacks in New York. And he then moved on to creating a compilation video of extremist material relating to the situation in Gaza following the conflict with Israel in December 2008. He was pouring petrol on the fire, they said. His actions could have spurred others to commit acts of terror. That's according to the jury at the Old Bailey in London. Gull told the court he did not support terrorism but acted through curiosity and his political beliefs. He was found guilty of 5 counts of dissemination of terrorist publications. Again, I ask, what did this guy actually do? He spread things around that were already out there. He expressed his opinion. Might not be an opinion that a lot of people agree with, but it is an opinion nonetheless. Did he do any violence himself? Did he even advocate violence himself? I don't see that here.
I have to say two things about this. One, just all right. Well, basically, you know, if someone is being charged or disciplined in some way for hate speech, with violent hate speech, you can maybe see that. But being put in jail for over a decade is scary in itself, as far as freedom of speech goes. And this is just really, you know, it's like one step away from a thought crime, really.
Well, he only got 5 years, so I guess he got off lucky.
Yeah.
They say this is one of the first successful prosecutions relating to disseminating terrorist publications via the Internet and shows our commitment to tackling those who support and encourage terrorism, whatever means they use. I've seen terrorism defined so broadly that kind of a thing could be used to apply to any enemy, anybody who's considered a threat, including, yes, hackers, including people who blow whistles and release information. This could be used against all kinds of people. In this particular case, we're seeing it used against Muslims, which is why you're not seeing much of an outcry.
And that statement should be taken to be, you know, very worrisome, because basically what they're saying is we were testing the waters, it went very well, and we hope to be back soon.
Absolutely. All right. We have another story of a totally different nature involving domestic battling of threats, I guess. And this is threats that that people might face if they have kids. And they're worried about what their kids might be doing online. Well, Mahwah Police Chief James Battelli of New Jersey says teenagers are locking moms and dads out of their virtual rooms every day, and parents are none the wiser. Trust sounds good, he says. It's a good cliche, but to stick your head in the sand and think that in ninth, tenth, even eighth grade, your child is not going to be exposed to alcohol, is not going to be exposed to drugs, it's kind of a naive way to go about it. Now, he basically is suggesting that parents figure out ways to hack into their kids' Facebook pages by installing key logging software and all kinds of other spyware and things like that. He says it's entirely proper for parents to use these kinds of tools. Keystroke loggers, monitoring their kids, and basically looking for inappropriate words, inappropriate contacts, things like that. It's kind of interesting to see a police chief advocating this kind of thing. What do you think, Bernie?
It's illegal. What he's proposing to do is illegal. Frankly, I think he should be prosecuted for a criminal conspiracy to commit wiretapping, because he is encouraging parents to wiretap their kids' computer communications without their knowledge. It doesn't matter if the victim is your child. It's still felony wiretapping, both federally and in many states. So I don't think this guy's going to get prosecuted, but it's such hypocrisy when a police chief like that, or any law enforcement official, advocates committing crimes.
Well, all seriousness, Bernie, do kids have the same rights? Kids under a parent's roof, can they charge their parents with wiretapping them if they listen in on a phone call? Is it really the same?
There's no exclusion in federal wiretapping law or in state wiretapping law. I haven't read every state's wiretapping law, but in the states I'm familiar with, Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, that sort of thing, there's no exception for that. Whether parents have been prosecuted for doing that so far, I don't know, but there's no exemption or exception where the victim is your son or daughter living in the same house with you.
Wow, so you're saying kids actually could prosecute their parents for listening in to phone calls?
Or they could. Whether the
reading letters.
Yeah. Now, whether the DA's office or the U.S. Attorney's office is going to take the case is a whole other matter. But there's no exclusion or exemption in the law for that.
Wow. Well, maybe you'd be the spokesperson for any kid that wants to prosecute their parents, because obviously, you know, an 8-year-old calls up a prosecutor, probably not going to take the kid very seriously. But if you speak on their behalf, maybe.
Well, I think they need a lawyer, not me, to speak on their behalf. But yes.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if any lawyer would actually do that, Mike.
I'm just curious about this claim that the children are being exposed to alcohol on the internet.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what his logic was there. I think he was using that as an example.
There's alcohol on television if they're just concerned about seeing alcohol, but actually obtaining it, I don't think you can do that.
I think the idea is more that if you know, your kids are doing these things, that they're going to be posting photos and stuff like that on the internet that they may not give you access to. So the idea is that you're spying on communication that they assume to be private, and then you may be able to reveal, you know, what they're really up to, I suppose, mm-hmm. is the logic there. I don't think it's a good logic, but
right. But there is logic all the same. Not right.
You know, the funny thing I think about this is, once upon a time, kids used to go outdoors, and their parents just had to trust that they weren't getting into trouble and hope that their parenting was actually good parenting. Now, with all this fear mongering, you have these police officials saying, "Well, you just, you know, watch your kids online because everything is so dangerous. You know, watch everything they do." And as we enter this more computerized world, it's just a way of basically sucking away our rights. Starting with the kids.
A friend of mine actually has a lot of experience with school bus drivers, and I hear the stories all the time about how parents insist that their kids be in sight of them at a bus stop. You can't have the kid walk around the corner to the bus stop. They want to be able to watch them at all times until they get on that bus. And then when they're on the bus, of course, there's a camera now that records the entire ride. So that's all documented. And I'm sure as soon as they get into the school and pass the metal detectors, there are more cameras. So every single minute of a kid's day can be documented by the parents. But that's not enough. Now we got to have Facebook and Twitter and all that monitored as well. So going
around the corner to wait for the bus isn't good anymore?
Well, no, of course not, because you can't see the kid. Who knows what might happen? You know, we have to be watching each other all the time. It's scary. It really is. And then there was this crazy headline I saw just before coming in. This was actually on the front page of CNN. You guys see this headline here? I can't believe I'm going to even say this on the air. Facebook like button takes over share button. I didn't read any more than that because I just was so blown away by this is actually news. This is what people care about. This is the front page of CNN. Does anybody want to talk about what it means? What the Facebook like button has taken over the share button. Is this a hostile takeover? Or what exactly is going on here? Buttons taking over other buttons.
All I just want to say is today I looked at the TV screen that was on CNN and I noticed that for a good portion of time they were talking about the iPad 2. And all I could think to myself is, they don't have any real news anymore. This is actually a legitimate segment now on their programming.
Uh-huh,
Charlie Sheen, the iPad, you know, mm-hmm. These are things you mention in passing and then move on to real news.
If Charlie Sheen had an iPad, that would be news. Well, it'd be broken too, but...
I think that the difference you have now is that, you know, everything is instant and on all the time. And so in the past, you had a news broadcast once a day and it was actually the news. And so since it's been extended to a 24-hour thing and an always-on thing on the internet, you know, you have to fill it with something in order to stay ahead of your competitors. And, I mean, it's the sad reality, but that's... It's not surprising that's
but
what happens.
News was no better, had no more content when it was only on for a half hour a day or an hour a day. It's just what the people feel is important and newsworthy, which is nonsense usually.
It's not what people think is important. It's what's cheap enough for them to produce stuff they can produce cheaply. That's why investigative journalism, good journalism, actually does sell. But it costs a lot of money to produce, so that's why they produce crap.
Unfortunately, crap sells as well. And
But no better than investigative journalism.
Oh, plenty better. It's unfortunate, but I think we share the responsibility here by even knowing who Charlie Sheen is and nonsense like that.
I just want to jump in and say that I personally think there's enough real news going on in the world that we could fill most of, you know, 24-hour news with real content. It's just like what
Absolutely.
You and Voltaire are saying.
Yeah. We just had Al Jazeera in here, actually, coming in to visit. And nobody.
How is Al?
Al is just fine, Bernie. But nobody in New York City can get them, except if they use the internet to get them. And I know a lot of people can't do that for whatever reason, as far as what's available to the masses. Alternative news, and it's weird that's considered alternative news. News from different perspectives other than the main TV channels here and the news networks that are the same basic crap everywhere. That is something that's considered out of bounds, something that people don't want. And I think people would want it if they had more exposure to it, but they need to speak up louder to make sure that they're actually listened to. Okay, we have a couple of letters to read, and then I'd like to take some phone calls because we haven't been able to do that in the last month or so. Our phone number is 212-209-2900, and anybody want to comment on this book? I brought this book in, but obviously we didn't have time to read it. It's interesting because it's called Inside WikiLeaks, my time with Julian Assange at the world's most dangerous website. And it's interesting. Supposedly the number two guy who defected from WikiLeaks and started OpenLeaks has written this tell-all unauthorized biography or a tale of WikiLeaks. What's really funny is that the pictures were taken by who? Who took these pictures?
Jacob Applebaum
took the pictures. Someone else involved with WikiLeaks. And I don't know where he fits in all the conflict. But it's amazing how everybody knows each other and it's all... same group of people.
Well, Mr. Schmidt, as he was known at the time, spoke with Assange.
Wait, is his name Schmidt or Berg? How do you change your name from Schmidt to Berg?
He had an alias, Daniel Schmidt, and his real name is now known to be Daniel Domscheit Berg.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's confusing.
But Schmidt is shorter, so I keep saying it. But he and Assange spoke together at least one of the CCC conferences. So there are pictures that hackers took of the two of them on stage because they were on stage at the same time when hackers were around.
Uh-huh. So what? It's just a coincidence that it was Jacob Applebaum's picture that got used?
Well, I don't know who selected the pictures, but...
He does take good pictures. He
does take good pictures.
Yeah, that's true. But he also was involved in WikiLeaks and gave the WikiLeaks keynote for Hope. So.
Like, I took a picture of the two of them, and it's not very good, so you shouldn't use it in a book.
I didn't see your picture in here. That's
no,
true.
It's not very good.
Voltaire.
Yeah, my opinion on the book is, I don't know.
Other than the cat reference.
Yeah, no, but the cat reference is emblematic of the whole problem with the book. I think what I don't even want to pronounce his name, is doing is with OpenLeaks is a genuinely good project. But I think that the book is indicative of just his desire to take revenge on WikiLeaks, which is very problematic.
This is the problem that I see, is that we have these organizations. We have OpenLeaks, we have WikiLeaks, we have Cryptome. And it seems like they spend most of their time just bickering at each other
and
instead of uniting. I think it's indicative of a lot of groups, actually, that just... They don't pay attention to what's going on in the world, and they focus on the people closest to them, who oftentimes agree completely with what it is they're doing, but they take all these pot shots at each other, and they weaken the entire cause as a result. Now, you can point all kinds of fingers at different people and say, well, it's because they act this way that I have to act that way. You know, someone's got to take the upper road here, and someone's got to say, let's settle our arguments later. Right now is when the war is being fought, and we have to basically unite or die, really.
We need a director, Emmanuel.
A director? I don't know about that.
Well, the United States has a director of national intelligence to sort of oversee all the intelligence agencies, so we need a director of international leaking, a DIL.
Okay.
You want that job?
Well, if you don't want to represent the 8-year-olds, I'm going to suggest you go for that job then, all right? You're getting a job out of the show one way or another, Bernie. Go ahead.
Unfortunately, you know, all these catty dramas and stuff like that don't end with high school. People continue it into real life. And
I've noticed that.
Unfortunately, it can backlash.
Yeah, it goes straight into senility and not even a small break. It's incredible. Kyle?
It is worth saying, though, that it's a tremendous waste of time. That here they are. They've got this new platform and this new form of journalism that can reach the entire world all at once, sort of on an equal ground, and they're wasting time, you know, stirring up drama and you know, basically attacking each other, and it basically it weakens the organization. I think that's just what oppressive governments and other folks who are against this sort of movement, that's just what they want.
Which is why they were crazy for that cat story, because it was a great example of something they could use to insult Julian Assange and take people's eyes off the actual issue.
Okay, so let's see. We have some email here, oth@2600.com. Actually, I've been reminded that we actually have Al Jazeera on the radio station. That wasn't what I was referring to. I was referring to having Al Jazeera on TV, which we're not allowed to have in this country, apparently, except in a couple of places. But yes, if you listen to WBAI between 5 and 6 in the morning, you can hear the audio from Al Jazeera for 1 hour, one precious hour a day. But that's it.
5 a.m. is a little bit late.
Or early, depending on how you look at it.
Early.
But right now, it's the only way you can get it in New York City on anything that's free over the air, even cable, or even satellite.
Now, I personally think, you know, whether you Mike likes that time slot or not, that's still a major step. You know, you have New York, you know, that's a very big audience. A lot of people are commuting at that time, and now they can listen to what is considered alternative media.
All right, let's listen to some... reader mail. oth@2600.com is our email address, and we're taking phone calls in just a moment. 212-209-2900. This letter is from Mr. White. Dear Off the Hook, I live in the UK. I've been listening to your show for some time now after accidentally stumbling on a wiki entry for Off the Hook whilst searching for a UK TV show of the same name. I didn't know there's a UK TV show of the same name. Wow. I'm glad I found you guys. I'd completely forgotten about the TV show until now, as you've expanded my horizons by introducing me to such wonders as 2600, Hope, and many more. In particular, I've been following your coverage of the WikiLeaks saga with some interest. Firstly, I should say that I'm fully supportive of what WikiLeaks claims to be a functional whistleblower platform, a mechanism by which individuals can disclose serious breaches of international law committed by governments, a collateral murder being a perfect example, the video that was released last year. No country should be allowed to break international law and simply cover it up. In this context, WikiLeaks is a service provider and a very much needed one. However, WikiLeaks seems to have gone a step further and simply wants to publish all classified information, irrespective of what that information says. And for me, that is a step too far. If WikiLeaks were to do this for information from all countries and essentially level the playing field, then I could consider that to be responsible journalism. But to do this with predominantly U.S. information is simply an attempt to stick it to the man. And to quote Jacob Applebaum, well, that's just stupid. I'm not sure if he was saying it in relation to that. I hope I've not taken his statement out of context, as that is broadly what he meant in his keynote address at HOPE. To be so one-sided is potentially dangerous to the U.S., as it gives enemies information that they couldn't have otherwise obtained for free and may risk the lives of U.S. servicemen and women when operating overseas. I'd like to see WikiLeaks go back to its roots and remain an unbiased whistleblowing platform that is respected and trusted by the majority. I would really like to hear your views on these comments as they go against some of the statements that have been made on the show. Thanks, Mr. White, for writing in on that. I believe WikiLeaks has redacted quite a bit of information that has been released in recent months. And as for a lot of it coming from the United States, it's where the leaks come from. If the leaks come from a different country, I don't see evidence that they're not being being pursued. Mike?
Yeah, I mean, material from the U.S. is released is created generally in English, which is very convenient for English speakers to leak and analyze. And I would just say in generally that while WikiLeaks is far from perfect, they're doing a much better job of this sort of thing than anyone else is right now, and it would be foolish to pretend that, you know, I could do it better.
Yeah, and it's simply not true that they're only publishing American documents lately. They publish tons just because, like in the Anglophone world, the American documents get more attention. But they've published a lot of things from other countries, even recently, like things like they just leaked something about a parade in Germany where there was rioting because there was overcrowded, but that didn't get any American media attention.
Rioting because of what?
Because it was overcrowded.
Okay.
Yeah. The love parade, yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Okay. Well, it doesn't sound like that much of a scandal, but...
Oh, it was. It was quite the scandal in Germany.
It was a big problem.
Rioting because of overcrowding.
Well, there weren't sufficient emergency exits, so the plan maybe should have never been approved in the first place and so on.
Okay, Kyle.
I agree with what you're saying, Voltaire, about how they're able to leak anything really from all different kinds of countries, and the language helps too for Anglophones to read English. And but WikiLeaks doesn't just leak things exclusively from the U.S. It just seems to be what they have now and what has been pertinent and sort of as a follow up to the collateral murder video, which was a big deal when it was released. And it's the way WikiLeaks is set up. They're set up as a journalistic entity, and they can make the editorial decisions. They can decide when things are released and to whom they release those things. And it's interesting. That's what Daniel Schmidt, I guess we're calling him, that's the way his new leaking organization wants to differentiate itself. They're trying to make it such that the leaker also then has control over where and how that leak is then disseminated as a leak once it's been sort of processed by his new open leaking organization.
Has OpenLeaks leaked anything yet?
It's going to be it's like in beta mode right now, and then they're going to launch. I think they're actually going to launch at the CCC camp this summer. Okay. And if you go, you can help volunteer with them, which I encourage.
I encourage anybody out there who has a really juicy leak to leak it to all these organizations at once and see who does the best job with it, and just sort of do a Consumer Report type of shopping comparison with the various leaking sites out there. And maybe there are other leaking sites out there, too, that we can compare as well. Okay, here's another letter. First of all, I'd like to say, this is from Eric, I'd like to say I love your show. There needs to be many more like it across the country, across the world. Thank you for telling the truth and not propagating government lies. Well, it's tempting sometimes, but we try to shy away from that. I catch your program via podcast and found it rather by accident. I also buy your mag on the newsstand, and as soon as I get some funds together, I'm going to do that subscription thing. I would have never known about all the stuff that's going on in the world if it wasn't for your show. I don't own a television, and I keep Big Brother's opinions out of my house, and as well as the newspaper. He relies on the newspaper. He doesn't keep it out of his house. The first I heard about the Libya and Yemen revolutions, I heard on your show. I love that you guys cover this, as I consider these people life hackers, creating their own destiny by hacking their system. You guys were talking about Al Jazeera on cable TV, but you can also go to the web and watch live streaming video of the news station. And though I'm not a terrorist nor Muslim, I watch because I like my news untainted. And international news is as close as I can get to that. And by the way, there was a story in Al Jazeera about Julian Assange as well. Just thought I'd throw that in there. I love arguing with my radio. I'm one of those people that doesn't always agree with you, but then I'm comfortable playing devil's advocate. I love hearing a whole lot of truth in a little bit of time. Thanks again, Eric, for that nice letter there. And you can write to us too, oth@2600.com. Maybe your letter will be read on the air as well.
You can send us a letter in the mail too. WBAI, off the hook, WBAI, 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York, New York, 10005.
You know, people don't do that nearly enough, and I can't remember the last time we actually got a letter like that. You know, the post office needs the work, so by all means, send us a real letter. That would be nice, too. All right, let's take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. Let's hear from our listeners, who we have not heard from live on the air in quite some time. And you're the first one. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Good evening. I just wonder why you guys aren't doing more research and expose of the company called NARIS, N-A-R-I-S, out of California, which in the deep packet inspection.
Okay. Hello? Well, I'm just checking to make sure they haven't paid us off. I don't think they're on the list.
No, so, I don't think they are on the list.
All right.
They are singularly responsible for the Egypt deep packet inspection fiasco, which was able to deny many users, you know, both Twitter and the Internet. And that company is now owned by Boeing Corporation, and Boeing bought them. It was founded by two Israeli military intelligence guys. And additionally, the companies like Comverse, and that's C-O-M-V-E-R-S-E, and the company NICE, N-I-C-E, and several of their offshoots have been guilty of all sorts of different Internet denial of what I'll call public access, not service, but public access. And most of these companies are Israeli, and it's really interesting that Israel trumpets itself as the democracy of the Middle East and yet produces software that generally denies people access to things that we would consider very much in the democratic mode. And I'll hang up and take my answer off the air.
Okay. I haven't heard of that company, but I'm fairly certain in the case of Egypt, the way that they cut off the Internet was the government called the ISPs or, mail, I don't know, sent them mail or something and said, basically unplug yourself from the Internet. So I don't know that there was any deep packet inspection going on in that case to get between them, but maybe somebody else knows more about this.
But not in, well, when Egypt went offline, it went offline. But when most of these countries are online, their internets are still filtered and censored and monitored. And the caller is right that a lot of the technology that's used to do this filtering, monitoring, and censoring is built by countries in allegedly democratic lands. The Chinese government, for instance, is a huge purchaser of Cisco products that they use to do the filtering. And I don't have a list of every country's preferred censorware vendor, but it's definitely the case that a lot of this stuff does come from the U.S.
Okay, 212-209-2900 is our phone number. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Oh, dear. That's what happens if you don't stay on the line. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Take a one-way trip to Cuba.
Did his voice change? I think it did. It's one way, though. He's modified his suggestion to us. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello?
Hi. What's on your mind?
Hi. I wanted to know if you guys heard about the story. Actually, I saw it online today about some designer who had said something anti-Semitic, I believe, and in France. And I believe he might be going to prison for it. I don't know if you...
I don't think he's going to prison for being anti-Semitic, but he got fired. I'm not sure how this relates in any way to anything we're talking about, but I've heard the story.
Oh, because you guys started off the program. You had mentioned somebody I can't remember the beginning of the program. You had mentioned somebody about... Oh, about the guy who who incited violence against the creators of Southport.
Right, the guy, okay, someone who gave out their addresses and things like that. Yeah, I think it's a slightly different thing, somebody saying something anti-Semitic and having to face the consequences from their employer as a result of that, as opposed to somebody being sent to prison for giving out someone's home address and, you know, suggesting people pay them a visit and having that interpreted as advocating violence. I just think there's more to that story. Maybe we haven't heard the whole range of things that he was doing, but it just seemed very, very heavy on penalties for what he actually was accused of doing. But thanks for that call. Let's take another one. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. No? Okay. How about you? You're on Off the Hook. Good evening. Speak up.
Oh, hi. Sorry about that.
Hi.
Good evening. So basically, you guys were talking earlier about the law enforcement official encouraging parents to, like, you know, eavesdrop on their kids' computers and stuff like that.
Break into their Facebook accounts.
Yeah, stuff like that. I would suspect that the legal precedence, not that I'm advocating parents do this, of course, is along the lines of employers and use of employer computers. And basically, employers have pretty free rein over their monitoring of employees.
Well, employers generally can read emails that are sent to the company email address. But I don't think employees are allowed to put key loggers and break into their Facebook accounts. Am I wrong?
If you're visiting stuff on your employer's computer, the employer has the right to watch you.
They can see what you're doing, but can they grab your passwords and
if
and
you
log
transmit
in as
them
you?
Over the employer's network in clear text, then yes.
Wow. Okay.
Well, but they're not then allowed to go and log into the person's Facebook account, but they can monitor what you're doing on Facebook.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I suspect parents have the same kind of thing, you know, rights. I would guess, but you know.
What do you think about that, Bernie?
I think it's interesting.
Okay.
You know, but, you know, I mean, I'm a parent, but my kid's too young to deal with this yet. But, you know, eventually we'll have to do something, I guess. But I'm not exactly sure what.
I just think we live in a society where there's no trust anymore. That might sound naive, but if you have to spy on your kids to find out what they're up to and read their mail and give them drug tests and things like that, it just seems to me like it's kind of unhealthy.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you have to have some sort of trust involved, and you need to see what your kids are doing, and you know, you check who your friends, in the real world, you know who your kids' friends are, and you get to understand who they are, and I imagine you have to do the same thing virtually to some degree or another also.
Well, you know who your kids' friends are because you meet them and you get to know them. You don't do a background check before they even enter the house the first time. That's a big difference.
Yes, it's true. Parents, you know, should take an active interest in what their kids are doing and try to pay close attention. That's their job. And I don't think anyone here is saying that they shouldn't do that. You know, but there's a certain way to go about it. There's, you know, being some, like giving your kids drug tests and watching their every move. Or there's parents taking more active interest in understanding the technology, like, for instance, creating Facebook accounts and friending their kids and making sure that, maybe they're not hiding too much or something
friending
like that.
Friending their kids, wow.
I think, though, we're being a little short-sighted here. I mean, I don't think that you should be, intensively spying on your children, but the internet and computers in general are a vast form of communication that didn't exist maybe when we were kids. And so there's a lot more that can go on in there that, it's not just necessarily these days knowing who your kids' friends are, because they have this whole other form of communication that doesn't involve them physically meeting people or talking to them on the phone, et cetera. So I mean, I don't support what this police officer necessarily says, but I think that the times are changing. And
well,
there are differences,
yeah, times are changing and the tools are changing, but I don't think the mentality should change. I think we should still, back in the days before there was internet, there were telephones. You could still go to the mall and hang out with unsavory types there, right. And there was more of a dialogue with kids. You wouldn't be hiring private eyes to follow them and spy on them and things like that, because that's an element of mistrust. And I think we can have the same dialogue with new technology and actually have conversations with our kids, and they won't fall into these traps.
So maybe it's a matter not so much of monitoring, but of just being aware that these new technologies exist and having conversations about it and saying, you know, I want you to know that maybe these are some things that you should be aware of that exist on the internet that maybe you're not, that are unsafe or whatever.
Yeah, and parents should be able to just kind of, you know, have the conversation and ask their kids, what are you doing on the computer? They should take an interest. I mean, if their children are so interested in computers and technology, I think it doesn't take much for a parent to step in and ask, you know, hey, what are you doing?
Or
what's going on?
Not be seen as the enemy, not be seen as a spy, as somebody you can actually talk to and trust, because you need that. You need that growing up. You need that in a family setting.
You know, that is such a good point, though. If you don't raise your kids to trust them, to be able to make certain decisions where you're trying to train them, then you're going to end up with a generation of people that need to be watched because none of them can be trusted.
And they're going to feel like that's what they're supposed to have happen to them.
If you treat people like they're prisoners, they're going to act like they're prisoners.
And this is one of my points about schools today, where you actually go through a metal detector when you go in. Kids think that's normal. It's not normal. There's something sick about a society. We have to go through a metal detector to go into school, and we better address that issue and not simply accept it. And it affects people for the rest of their lives. Anyway, we're really going off on tangents and soapboxes here. Let's take a couple more phone calls. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up.
Yeah.
You got to move faster. I'm sorry. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, great. How are you guys?
Hi.
Yeah, take you off speaker. There's three comments I want to make. The first one, I'll be very quick and brief, is the Hope Conference. Is there any hope that Hope will be because of the Penn State, Hotel?
We hope so. We do.
Is there any word on that, or are they delayed in the construction?
It's set for 2012.
So there is going to be one more Hope Conference, or are they going to shut it down?
Well, we hope there'll be many more. We just don't know exactly what the status of the hotel is right now. But if it's around in 2012... there will be one there. If it's around 2014, there'll be one there as well.
Okay. I mean, this is March, so, I mean, is there a deadline where you guys would know? The Hope Conference was in June?
Well, yeah, but it's there's also another year to go because this is 2011, and the next one won't be till 2012.
Oh, it's every 2 years. Well, why don't you guys have one this year then in case...
because it's a biannual conference. It can't be a biannual conference if we have it every year.
That's true, but under the circumstances,
we'd be breaking the law if we did that, wouldn't we? That's how we do it. We don't do it every year because it turns into a job. Then it turns into something that, you know, you just wind up putting a number at the end of it. It'll be Hope 14 or something like that. It gets boring. It gets to be not as much of an event. It's the same reason we don't have 2,600 meetings every week. We only have them once a month. And also, we like to go to other conferences too. We like to go to the Chaos Camp, which is taking place this summer. If we were doing a conference this summer, we'd be all crazy, and we wouldn't be able to go overseas and have fun there. And you should consider doing that too.
Where is the Chaos Conference? Is that in the New York area?
No, that's in Germany.
Okay.
That's why it
two
takes
other
time.
Okay, fine. Two other comments. The first thing is, you guys seem like you're very intelligent, but a guy...
We seem that way, yes.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, you have a little naivety when you say this guy shouldn't have been put away for publishing a guy's address online and to pay him a visit.
25 years?
That might be, but you're inciting someone to possibly go and kill that person or firebomb that person's house.
I've had people do worse to me and nothing happened to them. Not that I really hoping they would go to jail for even a day, but it's ridiculous.
There are people in Wall Street that should be in jail for the rest of their life. I agree with you, there's inadequacy in the law, but there is, you know, that's an interesting debate. There's no question about that.
Okay.
Who are the real criminals and what is the proper punishment? But you got to admit, there are a lot of sick people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But there are ways of finding them before they do horrible things. And I don't think this is one of the ways. We're out of time, but thanks for your call. Write to us, oth@2600.com. Remember, there are meetings this Friday coming up. 2600 meetings all over the world. Go to www.2600.com/meetings. And again, write to us, oth@2600.com. We'll see you again next week. Have a good night. Why not?
get along. Long and long.
Yes, yes, yes. It's 8 o'clock. You're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM.